ACEC is excited to announce that registration is now open for its fall conference taking place in Marco Island, Florida, this October. That's right, after a year of Zoom and virtual meetings, we're excited to be bringing our fall conference back as an in-person event. And we can't tell you how excited we are to look forward to seeing you there in person for all of the content, networking, and education that the fall conference is known for. Log on to www.acec.org for more information. We can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to the Engineering Influence Podcast, presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACEC Life Health Trust. Today, we're talking with Karen Sussman about difficult conversations. Karen is president of Karen Sussman & Associates in Denver and has more than 30 years' experience in helping professionals improve their communication skills. She has a long relationship with ACEC and our member organizations. She's spoken before the California organization 9 times over the past years. And she recently presented an ACEC online class titled Dealing with Difficult Conversations, Communication, Conflict, and Other Snafus, to which you will find a link in the program notes. Susan, thanks for coming on the program. Okay, so it seems to me that like difficult conversations have increased in both volume and intensity in recent years. Do you think that's true? And if so, why is that?
Okay, well, whether I think it's true or not, it would only be an opinion. And I bet everybody listening has an opinion, but I think we'd all say yes, that it seems to be the case. And I love that question because I've asked all kinds of people, engineers and others, why do they think this is? And one person said, well, we're all armored up. So I'm going to give you a few reasons here. One is that we have gotten into the habit of not having conversations. That's both technology, where we are texting, which is one way, or email, which is one way. You can't hear the emotion in that. If someone is upset, you certainly can't hear that or relate to it. I think that the political climate, and other climate issues have caused this really to be, someone said, armored, on guard, mm-hmm. and ready with our fists up. Instead of, we've lost the skill, if we ever had it, of saying, tell me more about that. I'm interested why you think that way. I'm curious. We don't do that. It's either my way or the highway. I heard also that there's a lack of trust out there, whether it be employees or employers or clients, whatever. And I think that's very sad that we don't trust people enough to have that conversation. We know we just need to be firm in our opinion and sure that that's the way we want to go. That people don't have heroes, anyone to aspire to that would be a great role model of how to communicate well. Also, and I can only speak to this from experience, because I'm not of the generation that feels entitled. And when you feel entitled, then you don't necessarily realize that your boss may have an opinion. And the boss asked me to do something and I said, okay. If they said I did something wrong, I said, what can I do better? It wasn't an argument. And I think that that makes a lot of difference. So to answer your questions, and I think there are more difficult conversations and there are a lot of different reasons. I think technology has really stunted our ability to communicate face-to-face. I think that all of us are in a sort of a negative state with the pandemic, and the uncertainty in the world seems very, very real. And that causes us to hunker down and protect ourselves. But I think we're on edge. I wanted to share a cartoon that I just saw. Is that okay? Tell you about this cartoon.
It won't appear, but you can describe it.
No, but I'm going to tell you what it says. So it's a man being interviewed in jail, I assume by his attorney, you know, about what happened. And he says, I had 21 items and he had 21, the other person. He had 21 items in the 15 items or less express lane. He had coupons. He had bottle returns. He wrote a check. Then he recorded it in his checkbook. Then he double checked his receipt. After that, all I remember is the police showing up. And, you know, and I think that even those small things that don't matter a bit in the real scope of our lives, we feel this need to confront it. So, yes.
On that point, I mean, you mentioned the pandemic and such, the feeling today that we all can have our own facts, that facts are even are up for opinion these days. That makes it very difficult to have a straight conversation.
Right, and people have chosen up sides. They're not opening to, well, tell me more. I wanna learn about that. Doesn't seem to be a lot of curiosity about another person's opinion, how they got to that. It doesn't mean you have to change your opinion, but I am curious to know what your thinking is based on. So that art of having a conversation back and forth is stunted at the moment. I'm hopeful.
Well, on that point, what are some things people could do to have a better conversation, to hear the other person?
Okay, so there's certain skills that we can use. And I would say the primary one is slowing down and listening. Don't jump to your taking a stand. And also we have this desire to make the other person wrong. Maybe there's a partial truth or something that we both have a common ground about, and that we could use that as a basis for a discussion. So listen with the intent to learn instead of the intent to criticize or win. And that can be a big one. Restate what the other person has said. Often I find that when I restate something, so you're saying that XYZ, and they'll say, well, no, what I really mean is. So these techniques kind of slow down the responses, and I think that's part of the cure, pausing. When we pay people attention by saying, you know, I'm going to have to think about that, that's a compliment to them. That's paying them respect instead of just coming back very quickly with our response. Make sure that you're communicating where there are no disruptions, and that's a challenge. That you're saying, you know, I want to hear how you feel about this. It's so noisy around here. Why don't we duck into the cafeteria or something like that to have that conversation? The time of day can get in the way. A person's workload, their distractions, what's going on at home. I think we have to understand these things. And the only way you understand is by asking and being approachable instead of threatening. And the only way you can do this is to practice. Watch your body language and other people's body language. If you have one of those, you'll pardon the expression, resting bitch faces, RBF, then, you know, maybe you need to get a little bit of a grin on your face or get some coaching on that. Everybody's under pressure. Everybody's concerned about health. Everybody's concerned about all kinds of things. And I think if you don't clear those up first, is this a good time to communicate? How are things going at home? You know, what are your concerns right now? If you don't get those out of the way, they're like the elephant in the room. Now, the hard thing about these skills, which we can practice with our families and friends and whoever is around, is that under stress, we often forget them. We retreat to what we've usually done. So that's why it's a good idea to practice, to take a breath and say, how could I make this go a little better? I'm going to try some of these skills Karen talked about. And then you always got to check it out. Just because they're nodding doesn't mean they have heard you. Certainly doesn't mean they agree with you. Some people are very good at nodding and saying, you know, that's really a good idea. And then that doesn't mean anything. And finally, I'll say, assume you don't know the whole story. You just don't know the whole story. And always leading with empathy. And these things are not easy to do. They're easy for me to say, but not always easy to do.
They sort of sound like what was in my, when I was a child, was just common courtesy. It's like we've just left that behind.
Oh, absolutely, because we're all standing on our little anthill trying to defend it as opposed to listening. And I think we all think that we can, very rarely do we change somebody else's opinion. It's more about having an understanding. Communication comes is related to the word common, making your messages common. So, okay, we may even disagree, but at least we understand how we got there. So slow it down.
I like that. Slowing it down sounds like a great sort of just starting point. When in your program that you gave for ACEC a few weeks ago, you had the statement, if you want to be heard, stop talking. And that, you know, that sounds counterintuitive. Could you expand on that a little?
Yes, I can. One is I've never learned anything when I'm speaking. And so it isn't that I, of course, don't say anything, but I might say, before we get into it, why don't you tell me more about the situation? And then be quiet. Don't interrupt, don't defend, just hear them out. If you want to say something, ask a clarification question, like tell me more. And then what happened? Wow, that's interesting. Some of my favorite phrases are, oh, or hmm, because that encourages them to say more. And it also shows them I am listening to you. Let the other person speak first. I often advise women, especially, let's say you're around a boardroom table and everybody's going to be giving his or her opinion. I often wait until I've heard a few opinions so I can get a feel for the room. And then I can respond with my opinion in a way that's going to fit in better, not be like theirs, but be heard. So listening is never a bad thing. I think you want to show you're listening, because just because you're in the same room with them and maybe you can hear every word somebody says, if you're looking at papers or reports or looking at your watch or your phone or texting, even though you think you're listening, you're not. And so it's paying somebody respect. I don't come out with guns blazing and respond to the wrong issue when I listen.
I think the phone is one of the worst things as far as communication, because people have it on their desk or on at the table. And that if it rings or if it buzzes, they have the sense that that thing is more important than you. And they want to check what that is, even though you might be talking. I find it very disrespectful.
It's very rude. And one thing that I have found is that I will make a point of saying, just a minute before you start, let me make sure my phone is turned off, because that shows them that they are the most important person in this conversation, that I really want to hear what they have to say. And you know, I always want to say when somebody picks up their phone at a dinner table or something, what am I, chopped liver? I mean, you invited me for dinner or we're having a meeting and you're on your phone? No.
I agree.
And of course, that was not the case a couple of decades ago.
Not at all, no.
No.
And it also, as well in your talk, you had something which I'll admit I didn't understand, and that's why I'm following up with that. It was a saying, and I don't know if you pronounce it or you just sort of spell it out, but it basically says, your understanding and my understanding are the same understanding. What does that mean?
Okay, so it's an acronym, Uematsu. And when I do a live presentation, I give everyone a business size card with that. And what you just said, your understanding and my understanding are the same understanding. That is the goal of communication, is to make the message common. And too often we don't endeavor to see if the other person is understanding it as we said it. After all, the time of day can have an effect on the other person or on our ability to hear things. If we're hungry, if we're not feeling well, if we've got troubles at home or at work, these all get in the way of our communicating clearly, of listening and hearing. Listening is one thing, but hearing, and we've got to check it out. And so if the people that you manage or oversee or work with, or even clients, if they all had this concept of Uematsu, your understanding and my understanding are the same, and you check that out. For instance, you have a deadline. All right, so before we hang up, let's make it really clear, Jerry, you understand when this is due, who are the people who are on board, and you don't just say it, you hear it back from them, because it's, we want to please, so we can often say, oh yeah, I got it. But sometimes I say that and I look back and I think, I don't got it. I just wanted to sort of get off the phone already or off the email. And I think that it's just confirming that we're on the same plane. That's all it is. In fact, an engineer shared that with me. And we need to be sure people have different levels of understanding or different levels of expertise. And I had an experience, which is not engineer, well, I suppose it could be engineering related, where I asked my significant other to fill potato shells for Thanksgiving dinner with a big bowl of mashed potatoes that I had already cooked and everything. And he was a very bright attorney. I thought that was clear instructions. And he said, but first I have to understand, how did you know how much mashed potatoes to make? Well, he had no idea that the mashed potatoes came out of the shells, out of the potato. And so I was thinking, now, making those was my area of expertise, but not his. But I assumed, I skipped steps. We do that all the time. We skip steps. When we know how to do something well, or we have it in our head, we often don't give all the details. So your understanding couldn't possibly be the same as my understanding unless we check it out.
And so you recommend at the end of a conversation to just take a moment to see if the two understandings jive?
Yes. And that's why I say, and the person can say if they feel uncomfortable doing that, is, you know, I heard this saying, Uematsu, one time. Your understanding and my understanding are the same understanding. So let's check it out. Do we have the dates exact? You know, so that'll cut down on our emails, our texts, our time frame, delays, cost overrides, all of these things, if we make sure. So do you mind if we take a moment and just go through this? And I think it's a good practice with family, with teenagers, with all kinds of relationships. Just check it out.
In the engineering industry, there are a lot of unbalanced conversations, you know, the project manager to client or manager to employee or project manager to subcontractor. Does the person who is sort of in the weaker position have to accommodate the person in the stronger position to have a decent conversation?
Well, let me think about that and phrase it a little differently. But right off the top of my head, I would say, no, but the person with the stronger position is the one who has good communication skills. You can't always make the other person have good communication skills. If they don't, they don't. So if you understand different personality types, if you understand that some people want the bottom line right away, while other people want reassurance, then no matter whether you are in the mail room or in the executive suite, you have the power to step back and say, this person needs reassurance, or I'm not going to talk about the family and the golf trip and all of this because they just want the bottom line. So it isn't what makes you weaker is really if you don't have the skills and you don't practice them. So weaker or stronger, the person who understands how to communicate with different styles is actually in the stronger position. Now, it would be wonderful if everybody would understand my style. I want to be accommodated, but that isn't the case. So by practicing skills, and they have to become like muscle memory, because in a stressful situation, they can go out the window. And so if you can step back again, pause, slow down, and say, what is the best way to approach this? And obviously, we all need to respect our job and the person who we're with. And I think that goes back, as we talked, Jerry, about, you know, the lack of respect, the lack of trust, that we should both be sitting down at the, on the same level physically, that we shouldn't have a desk between us, that if you're behind the desk, pull your chair out to the side so you're at an angle to the person. So many things that you want the other person, even if you're in a position of power, you want them to feel comfortable enough to be truthful and honest with you. And I know that sometimes they're power plays. I'm not naive. You want to go in there without attitude and ask what the other person would like to see change. If you are in the position of power, bring that person along as a colleague. After all, they're doing the job. They've got a lot of good information. So I would hope that people in a company would feel empowered by the management to be able to share opinions. And maybe I'm dreaming, but I hope not.
I hope not. Is it a case in a situation like that where over, if you're working in a company over a certain period of time, you learn what your how your manager likes to conduct a conversation, or if you have a client, you learn over the first few meetings how they like to have a conversation, and then you accommodate those them.
Absolutely. It doesn't mean you give up who you are or your identity, but it's like, which I said in the program that you attended, that we have a toolbox, and your a hammer might be your very favorite tool. And you don't just love it, you love it. But it doesn't work in every situation. And so maybe you're not so great with a screwdriver or an electric screwdriver, but learn how to use that, because that will serve you well in the situation where you need that. So the person who can flex his style, not give it up, but accommodate the other person, whether they be the CEO or, as I said, in the mailroom, you are going to be in the position of power. And by power, I mean to have a good outcome for the conversation.
I like that term, flex your style. I think that's a good description of being flexible, but maintaining your own integrity. I think that's good. Just to sort of close up, maybe a couple examples of difficult conversations that engineers often have to hold, such as a project manager with a client whose expectations have not been met. How would a project manager approach, you know, make the most of a conversation like that?
Yeah, well, I assume that the client has complained. And so don't assume that you know what is wrong. When somebody says to me, I know where you're going with this, you know, or you've got somebody who speaks at a faster speed than you do, or sometimes I have to think through things before I say it, that's very irritating and in a way disrespectful. So again, you're going to have to slow down. I think that must be the theme. Let the client express the problem fully without your interrupting, getting defensive. And boy, sometimes that takes biting your tongue. Ask open-ended questions to make sure you've got the information right. Pause. when you pause, other people feel the need to fill in that blank. They can't tolerate that lack of noise. And so you're going to get good information. If you go, so you thought it would be by Tuesday, and then be quiet, people are going to fill in. And also take notes. I'm going to take some notes. This is important. I'm going to take some notes. That does a couple of things. One, it shows respect. It shows you're serious. You're really listening. And the other person is less likely to say things that he doesn't mean or want recorded. And so that is something that can be helpful too. If you say you'll get back to the client, do it. And when and say, you know, I'll get back to you Tuesday. Is Tuesday soon enough? And if they say yes, then you call them late Monday. Over deliver and under promise. And then always do what you say you will do. You can't live without clients. I remember doing work for a huge hotel chain, and they said life would be so much easier without guests. And yes, that's true, but it's a little hard to feed your family. So I think, again, slowing down, asking open-ended questions, Jerry, and taking notes, and just showing respect, because we could be defensive in that position, you know, as a project manager.
Yes.
And we want to learn. You always want to learn.
Well, that pregnant pause, I think, is probably a very effective tool, because it almost made me want to start talking. So, what about a firm owner and employee who's not performing up to expectations? How can the firm owner sort of hold that conversation without it devolving?
Okay. That's always a lot of fun here. But one is, again, to show respect and take that person on sort of as a partner. I always think of putting my arm around them. So one, pick a convenient time and a private place to talk, because that's not comfortable for them, obviously. You have to be direct, specific, and at the same time, non-threatening. So Bob, I see that you have been late to work 4 times out of the last 5 days. So that's direct, specific, but it's not, what in the heck were you thinking, Bob? You know what time we start, and you're never, you're always, none of that. Just direct, specific, non-threatening. And then empathize with the other person. Let's say, I know, I've had trouble with my car. And then your role is to say, boy, it is hard to get to work on time. When your car isn't working, what can we do, you and me, to rectify that? So that's where you sort of bring them along in the solution. And you also claim, if this is true, that you are valuable here. And so how can we how can we do, what steps do we need to take to make sure you're here on time? And listen, pause. I always think too, keeping your goal in mind. Is it stress relieving or goal achieving? Another thing I just learned recently on a talk about stress, because I've done lots of programs on stress, but I'm still learning, is that when you are under stress, your frontal lobe, which is sort of the executive functioning of your brain, shuts down. So here you are being someone saying, you've done wrong. And you're supposed to come up with a response, and your brain is not. And so you have to do something physical. So if you are calm with the person, the employee, and you say, you know, let's just pause and think about this. How could we solve it? That gives them time to take a breath and to get back into really a functioning mode. Don't make the desk a barrier. You sit, both stand. Don't stand over somebody. being a woman, not being very tall. I appreciate it when I'm not looking up all the time at somebody, and share the consequences. You know how important it is for you to be here on time, and we get started with our projects right away. And if we can't work it out, we'll have to have another discussion and then get a commitment from that person. And then make sure that the check back to make sure the commitment is being fulfilled. Also ask yourself, does the employee have the tools and training to do a good job? Because everything's moving very rapidly in the firms that I've worked in. And I'm not, I'm a consultant, I'm not a full-time employee, but it's very rapid pace. Everybody's moving. And have we slowed down enough to see if people have what they need to get the job done? And I observe that all the time in firms that I'm in. So those are my steps, is just to bring that person on, empathize, use the tools we've talked about throughout this conversation, and know that you're probably going to goof up a lot of the times.
We're only human.
Yes.
Let's just do one more. A project manager and a subcontractor who's fallen behind schedule. What can the project manager do to keep the relationship strong, but also get some movement?
Okay, I think it would be the same thing, that you're really in partnership. It's the same thing as dealing with an employee. You're in partnership with that subcontractor to get the job done for the client. And so thinking of it as a partnership, we've got this issue, the client is not happy with where we are. How do you see it? What are the steps we need to take? Do you have all the supplies? Do you have, now it's hard to find people to employ, which is just so incredible to me, but I understand it. And again, make sure that there's a commitment, that they realize they may have other people they're working for, just how important this is, and that there's a firm commitment there. Or else you have to use somebody else because the client wants the work done.
The nature of business.
Yes, it is business.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on the program. It's been very enlightening for me.
Well, good. Thank you. Yeah, I enjoyed it very much and happy to do this again.
Okay. Well, this has been the Engineering Influence Podcast, presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACC Life Health Trust. Thanks for listening.